Good afternoon. This is Bob Krueger with Thought for Food for February of 2019. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it will be of interest to everyone. As you already know, there was no Thought for Food program for January of 2019. I began 2019 in Rex Hospital with a case of pneumonia. It's taken me a while to recover my strength and try to get back to the things I enjoy doing. One thing that happened during my hospital stay was the discovery that some of the items, like medical power of attorney, were 8 years old. Both my wife and I have this document for each other. What we found was that these documents, while legally binding, were 8 years old. In some cases, it might mean that one of those involved had either died or had moved across the country. So we plan a visit with the attorney who drafted these documents 8 years ago and get them updated. If you've not looked at your documents lately, perhaps it'd be a good idea to check the dates on yours. Because there was no January program, some of the items in this program refer to the beginning of the new year, 2019. I'll share with you some comments made by Gerald Baker, the editor-at-large at the Wall Street Journal. He begins, "This time of year, the mind inevitably turns to resolutions. The case for making them is highly uncertain. On one hand, psychologists tell us setting goals for ourselves enhances our sense of purpose and helps organize our lives around priorities. But evidence suggests that most New Year's resolutions fail before January is over. So, do we feel good for having set ourselves a target, or do we feel bad for having tried and once again have failed? In that sense, resolutions are a little like hope, something else we tend to turn to with the change of the calendar. Philosophers have debated for centuries whether hope is a virtue or an evil. Since hope suggests uncertainty, it is incompatible with faith. Does hope, in fact, represent the triumph of self-delusion, an unwillingness to face up to brutal realities, or is hope a necessary condition for progress, a way of motivating us to strive for better?" Another exercise in futility we like to engage in at this time, especially those who publish for a living, is making predictions. This is a mystifying, substance-free exercise that has no intrinsic value. Most of the millions of predictions you will read about will be obvious or they will be spectacularly wrong. Can you recall a single prediction that you've read in the past years that was controversial or at least challenging in some material way and was correct? Me neither. In any case, the most important events that happen each year are almost by their very nature unpredictable. Yet, for some reason, writers and media people still go at it year after year. I can tell you with absolute confidence the answer to some of these questions is yes, and the answer to others is no. And what's more, I promise to present myself here again next year and hold myself accountable. Whether you make resolutions or predictions, or whether you just cling to hope and wait for events to come at you like a landslide, I wish you all a very peaceful and prosperous new year. Is Mr. Baker a bit of a cynic, or is this a type of tongue-in-cheek story? You get to answer this question. 2019 begins with a news story with this headline, 2019 Food Trends. What will be on your plate? More vegetables? Improved gut bacteria and cocktails with less alcohol? Many of the predictions about what we eat and drink in 2019 point to a quiet, restorative, and potentially grim time ahead. Then again, these forecasts always arrive carrying the clean, healthy pine scent of New Year's resolutions. The good news, there will be cheese tea and salad robots, according to the prognosticators. As we pored over dozens of lists handicapping the next big food trends and interviewing people who get to drill into customer behavior, we keep in mind that everyone could be dead wrong. Food forecasting is not a science or even an art. Still, the game is a fun one. And here are some of the more intriguing guesses at what and how Americans will be eating in the new year. Cheese tea, which I understand is either black or green tea, sipped through a cap of cream cheese blended with cream or condensed milk. I'd like to see such a beverage and possibly taste it before passing judgment on an item called cheese tea. The next lettuce, the great romaine scare of 2018, a strain of E. coli that was eventually traced to a reservoir in California, has helped make lettuce ripe for a new star in 2019. The current darling of the restaurant salad, the little gem lettuce, recently was denounced as overexposed by New York Magazine restaurant critic Adam Platt. Expect to see little-grown varieties show up on menus and an explosion in lettuces grown hydroponically. That's grown in water. Many of them in urban container farms. Some chefs are rallying around Celtus, a lettuce with a leafy, bitter top and a stalk that's a cross between celery and asparagus. Chinese cooks know it as wosan. Even wild weeds like dandelion greens or sorrel may get a shot. Whichever wins, kale is still over. The new flavor profile, sour and funky with shades of heat. This is what happens when you mix an interest in fermenting with the millennial palate. Melinda Romero, who has the title of Trends Insight Manager at CCD Helmsman, a food research and product development firm in Emeryville, California, explained the generation that loves global mashups and bold flavors this way. They grew up with Flamin' Hot Cheetos, and while they still want spicy, I think beyond that, they've grown to become interested in flavors that are acquired, sour flavors, and even flunky flavors like fermented foods. Here is a question that is one we should answer at any time of the year. Are you getting enough sleep? Sleep, we know we need it, but too often it's the first thing to go when we're crunched for time. Our blasé attitude towards sleep has created a society of zombies walking around at half power. And the worst part of it is that we might be too tired to notice. Most of the time when somebody says they only need 5 or 6 hours of sleep, that means their ability to tolerate sleep deprivation is better than most, said Meeta Singh, M.D., the medical director at the Henry Ford Sleep Laboratory in Detroit. They're actually walking around with a sleep debt and have forgotten what it feels like to be alert and awake. For older people, there are other repercussions. A recent summary of sleep data gleaned from 10 million Fitbit users over nearly 6 billion nights collaborated previous research showing that the amount of deep sleep we get decreases with age. You start to slowly lose the robustness of slow-wave sleep, that dreamless non-REM sleep that's most restorative, said Sigrid Vesey, M.D., a professor of medicine at the University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine. In other words, do nothing to change your sleep habit over the years, and it's a slippery slope to zombie land. Luckily, with a boost from the self-tracking movement, science is uncovering more ways to help improve our sleep. If skipping sleep causes so much damage, why do we think we can shake it off? People who regularly skimp on sleep are like chronic alcoholics, Vesey says. This state of impairment has become their baseline, so it's hard for them to recognize that anything's wrong. When people have had one night of impaired sleep take cognitive tests, they say they did terrible, Vesey says. But after that first day, they stop noticing their impairment. Their performance goes down almost linearly with time, but they seem to lack perception that this is happening. Meanwhile, people around them see that they've a short temper, seem depressed, or are uninterested in normal activities. How about a nap? Falling asleep on the job was once considered a firing offense, but that attitude may be changing as business and sports teams adopt napping as a performance strategy. Consider skier Michaela Schifrin, who took a nap between ski runs on her way to an Olympic gold medal. Yes, I usually take a nap every afternoon. If you nap, it's recommended you time it to a period of 20 to 60 minutes. More is counterproductive. Many of us do not eat out very often, but we're still interested in what is available when we get a chance to dine away from home. It's not going to get much easier for the restaurant industry. After facing stagnant sales and weak customer traffic in 2018, U.S. residents will encounter more headwinds in 2019, including rising food and wage costs that may stall profit and hinder efforts to jumpstart growth. Americans are demanding delivery, and it's forcing big chains to get into the game. That means costly technology investments. Revenue from orders through third parties is often shared, making it more difficult to turn a profit on digital customers. It also means delivery doesn't necessarily make sense for low-cost items. Challenges aside, it's hard for restaurant chains to ignore a service that more and more customers are demanding. Starbucks tried delivery this year in Florida with Uber Eats and is now expanding to almost a quarter of its domestic company stores. Delivery is attractive to companies because go-to orders usually mean customers spend more. Applebee's and IHOP say the average check is significantly more. The value wars could start to sting in 2019 after cashing in on cheap ingredients, which helped eateries advertise steep discounts and a slew of $1 deals. 2019 may see an uptick in food inflation. Beef, chicken, and cheese may be more expensive, according to Bob Darrington, an analyst at Telsey Advisory Group. This year, average food costs may be up about 5.4%, he estimates. With unemployment low, higher wages will weigh on profit margins, according to Robert W. Baird and Company analyst David Tarantino, who mentions minimum pay hikes and investment in other employee benefits as contributors to added pressure. Those with a big concentration of company-owned locations will be hard hit, including Darden, Chipotle, and Starbucks. In the past, we've heard a lot about NCSU's Howling Cow ice cream. In the middle of last month, Harris Teeter announced it is now stocking this famous ice cream, Raleigh, Cary, and Wake Forest. NC State's beloved Howling Cow ice cream has been made by NCSU for more than 70 years using milk and cream from the university's own livestock. The proprietary frozen treat is available across campus in stores and cafes, from single-serving scoops and cups to 3-gallon tubs. The public at large gets one annual indulgence of Howling Cow, traditionally served at North Carolina State Fair, where it's one of the longest venue lines. Fans can now get their fix year-round with Howling Cow nested among the frosty likes of Breyers and Ben & Jerry's. Harris Teeter continues to be an excellent partner and supporter of our agriculture education programs. This unique partnership will make it convenient for people to enjoy Howling Cow without coming to campus or waiting in line at the state fair, said Gary Cartwright, State's Dairy Enterprise System Director, in a news release. To start, there will be 6 Howling Cow flavors available in pint-sized containers. Sales of ice cream will help fund scholarships within the school's dairy and agricultural programs. Evidently, demand was more than expected, as some prospective customers were unable to find any Howling Cow product in the stores. I feel certain that this program has always been already been taken care of. We all agree that smoking is not good for one's health. A new story in December 2018 tells us that babies are at greater risk for secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke is defined as smoke from others that affect you. The article begins, infant and toddlers in low-income communities may be even more at risk from secondhand and third-hand exposure than has been believed, according to new federally supported research. In testing that included more than 1,200 children, researchers found that up to 15% of them had levels of contanine, a byproduct of the body's breakdown of nicotine, comparable with that could be found in an adult smoker. Overall, about 63% of babies and young children in the study had discernible levels of contanine, evidence of significant exposure to secondhand and thirdhand smoke, according to the study, which was published in the journal Nicotine and Tobacco Research. Previous similar research focused on older children detected contanine in less than half of the children studied or did not document levels of contanine. for those who remain skeptical about the body's susceptibility to passive smoke exposure, this study may serve as a wake-up call. We're finding as many as 15% of the babies have levels as if they smoked themselves, said Clancy Blair, the senior study author and a professor of cognitive psychology at New York University. It was definitely more than we expected, and it's scary, said Lisa M. Gatsky-Kopp, this study's lead author and a professor of human development and family studies at Penn State University. Smoke continues on in the environment even after the cigarette is out. A study, which also includes researchers from other universities, sought to find if infants and very young children are at extreme increased risk from passive smoke exposure given their higher respiration rates and likely contact with surface residues. The exposure included secondhand smoke from being around a smoking adult or thirdhand smoke from residue on surfaces like toys, floors, or clothing. Gatsky-Kopp said the researchers plan to use the data to learn if increased exposure to second and thirdhand smoke is related to later health problems, including learning deficits. At Morrisville, a Morrisville fourth grader has a green thumb and a giant cabbage to prove it. Harini Nirmalkoma grew a 24.7-pound cabbage last year and won a $1,000 saving bond from Bonnie Plants, which sponsors Kids Grow Green, Cashing In on Cabbage, an annual contest for school children. It was a lot of work, Harani said. I came home every day and watched it grow. She added, it takes a lot of patience. I've learned that a farmer's job is really hard. Harani's cabbage was one of many in the state that made the cut. Her entry was selected last spring in a random drawing at the North Carolina Department of Agriculture. More than 22,000 third graders across North Carolina participated in the contest. Across the country, more than 1 million students grew a cabbage. Harini is a student at Sterling Monterasi Academy and Charter School in Morrisville. Last fall, she took home a special hybrid college plant that's designed to grow into a giant, often bigger than a basketball. Some have reached 40 pounds, the company said. Bonnie Plants seeks to inspire a love of vegetable gardening in young people and continue to grow our next generation of gardeners. Harini's father said the experience was a great one for her. She learned how much work it takes to grow something, and she's more excited about eating vegetables now. We knew it was a big cabbage, but didn't expect it to be the first place cabbage. As Harini's cabbage began to grow, she learned that rabbits loved nibbling on the plant's succulent leaves. I didn't think they would grow back, she said, but they did. To protect the cabbage, her father built a net around the plant, and the cabbage quickly recovered. Harini said she learned cabbages need at least 6 hours of daylight each day. She also learned how water and fertilizer make plants grow faster. It took about 3 months for the cabbage to reach its final size, she said. By the time the Harini's cabbage was ready to harvest, it had taken over an entire corner of her family's garden. It was about 3 feet across, and they thought it was at least 20 pounds. They picked the cabbage, they took pictures and submitted them to the contest and waited. The cabbage were judged on size and appearance. After the best in each state was selected, the entrees were sent to the Commissioner of Agriculture, and a winner was drawn. This is a wonderful way to engage children's interest in agriculture while teaching them not only the basics of gardening, but the importance of our food system and growing our own, said Bonnie Plants President Stan Cope. This unique, innovative program exposes our children to agriculture and demonstrates through hands-on experience where food comes from. Chapel Hill's Allen & Son Barbecue, one of North Carolina's most revered barbecue destinations, has closed. Keith Allen started the restaurant 48 years ago at the age of 19. Cooking pork shoulders over wooden coals from logs he split himself. Its reputation grew over the years from a Chapel Hill favorite to one of the state's historic restaurants included on the North Carolina Barbecue Society's Trail of Distinguished Pits and recently named by Southern Living magazine as the fifth best barbecue restaurant in the South. Allen & Son's last day was in early December, Allen said. He closed it quietly to avoid a long, teary farewell. It would have been very emotional, too much to endure, he said. You can't hug and kiss and cry and all that stuff and still work an eight-hour day. I just want to thank my customers. Without them, we wouldn't have done anything. The smokers, cookware, and memorabilia will be put up for auction. Allen does not own the property, having leased the building and land from the beginning. We've done it for 48 years. We did our run. It's time to move on, Mr. Allen said in a telephone interview. It's a hard way thing to walk away from something like this. It's a cycle of life. You do what you're supposed to do as long as you do it right. North Carolina's barbecue traditions are a part of the state's identity, a prideful connection across centuries and regions over sharing smoked pork, whole hog, or shoulders. Even in the quickly growing Triangle, Allen and Sons existed in the old school found off Millhouse Drive by the way of country roads outside ever-developing Chapel Hill. Mr. Allen is famous for doing almost all the work himself, showing up at 3 a.m. in the morning since the beginning to light the smokers and cook the sides. The restaurant resembles a hunting cabinet, the dining room paneled in wood, ducks on the wall, and checkered tablecloths on the tables. Allen said the closure wasn't a financial decision, that the restaurant remained busy to its last day, though it had shorter hours and days over the summer. Over the years, Mr. Allen said he had lined up five different successors, with each ultimately not working out. In the end, he decided to close and sell off the restaurant in pieces. Now, he said, he'll focus on his other businesses, including sporting goods store, Blackwood Station Outfitters in Pittsburgh. The Allen and Son in Pittsburgh will remain open, operating independently through a licensing agreement. After a career making some of the most famous barbecue in North Carolina, Mr. Allen said he's proud of the restaurant he built, hoping it adds some measure of joy to the community. You produce what you can to make the world better than you're passing through, he said. That's all I can do every day. Farewell, Mr. Allen. One of the oldest restaurants in Raleigh's North Hills closed last month. Q Shack will move out of North Hills in January as the owners of the barbecue restaurant change over to catering. Tom Meyer owns North Hills Q Shack and said in an interview he will close the restaurant and move his catering company, Southern Harvest Hospitality, to a new larger kitchen somewhere in the Triangle. We're not going out of business. We're going into primarily a catering operation and can't do it out of this kitchen, Meyer said. It's just the wrong location for a catering business. Q Shack opened in 2005 at one of North Hill's first restaurants. It was the second location in the original Q Shack, which started in Durham and is still operating, but owned and operated independently by Mr. Meyer. The move to catering has been in the works for about a year and a half, he said, having notified North Hills developer Kane Realty in the summer of 2017 that Q Shack would likely not renew its lease, which expired at the end of January. Mr. Meyer said he also notified his staff at the time that Q Shack would close, but offered all employees a job with the catering company. In recent years, the restaurants in North Hills have started moving away from fast casual into upscale chains or new sit-down restaurants, Mr. Meyer said. Q Shack didn't necessarily fit in. They've done a magnificent job with North Hills, Mr. Meyer said. It's sort of become a little city within a city. Their vision is more experimental, a lifestyle center. We're not making a branding statement. We're just trying to make darn good barbecue. But Mr. Meyer said, this time, Q Shack has come to an end. I don't feel called to open Q Shack in another location, he said. I feel I'm supposed to be at weddings and events where it can be a little more meaningful in the experience. It never felt right to move the restaurant, and it never ends up being a good idea. Almost all universally fail. Don't worry, folks. There's still a lot of good barbecue places in our area. According to the new data from the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, less than 25% of American adults get the recommendations of at least 150 minutes per week of moderate physical activity, or 75 minutes of vigorous physical activity, plus muscle strengthening exercise two or more times per week. Besides helping with weight control and preserving muscle mass while losing weight, there are many good reasons to resolve to get moving this year. According to a Physical Activity Guidelines Advisory Committee, there is strong evidence that a combination of aerobic and resistance activities is one of the most important things you can do to maintain good health and quality of life as you age, and may support cardiovascular health, maintain muscle, improve balance, and help preserve bones. It can also improve sleep quality and improve physical function for individuals of all ages. In other words, whoever you are, me included, get moving. If you plan to try your general health, set realistic goals. For example, if you're drinking a 12-ounce can of soda a day, set a goal of just enjoying that soda once a week. I've met that goal. A glass of ice water with a bit of lemon juice works fine. If you want to lose 10 pounds of weight, set your goal to try to lose 1 pound a week. If you succeed, set the goal to lose one more pound next week, and so on. For some folks, keeping a log of what progress you make is helpful. Health experts tell us in setting this sort of goal, we should be specific. Example, I will exercise more. Instead, say I'll take a walk around the neighborhood with my spouse every night after dinner. For those of us who don't like to go out after dark, take that walk during daylight hours. The big thing, go for that walk. Cheer yourself on. Celebrate each little achievement. Throw your fist in the air, pat yourself on the back, and say aloud, good job. May create an association between your new behavior and positive feelings. Celebrate each new step. We know we can't achieve success by leaving it up to chance. Resolve to make specific, measurable changes. Make a plan, track your progress, and find support. An example of a measurable goal, I will eat more fruits and vegetables. Set a goal of eating 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. The servings goal is only a half a cup, so 5 servings over a day is not a huge amount. Don't say, I'll never eat ice cream again. Say, I will enjoy a serving of ice cream on Friday nights after dinner. We've run out of time for today's episode of A Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time at the same time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. And let me say this. I am a procrastinator, and I tend to put off doing what could easily have been done today and say, well, I'll get it tomorrow. And I'm asking you to consider your situation. Are you a procrastinator also? I'm made a New Year's resolution to try to move out of this being a procrastinator and becoming someone who gets things done. But take care until next time.